Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for hanging around with me. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. And don't forget you can find out more about our good friend Joan Pride. And I know you want to do that. I know you want to find out more about her because she's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors and a pretty cool lady too. Joan, welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Jim. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's good to have you back.
Thank you.
I know it's and it is, isn't it?
As you say every week.
Go ahead and say it.
I'm not saying it.
Come on, say the dream come true part, Joan.
There you go. Now it's been said. You need new material.
I know it. I need it. But I just love that so much. Joan, what's the news from Kiplinger this week?
Well, this week our big story is about housing. And, you know, housing's been such a big engine of the economy the last several years. You know,
like kind of wonder. Years.
Yeah. I mean, is this ever going to end or how are things going to be this year? And that's kind of what... The whole question is in our lead this week.
Well, and you actually say you think it's going to remain strong in 2005. How can we have another strong real estate market?
Well, we're just darned optimistic people. That's all I can.
Well, Pollyanna, thy name is Kiplinger, isn't it?
You think we're being Pollyanna?
Well, I don't think so, but I do think that that you guys do. I do think that your glasses have a slight hint of rose tint.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, there isn't. I like people like that, actually. But seriously, you base this on some pretty good evidence with regard to the job and population situation. Tell us about that.
Right. Well, we're saying that underpinning the ongoing growth in the housing market, which, by the way, we think prices will rise an average of 3%. But we say that... to me, this is astounding. Then we say that in the U.S. you'd need about 2 million new homes every year over the next 10 years to keep up with the the increase in new households.
Mm-hmm.
So there is demand.
See, that is amazing, isn't it? That's a very interesting statistic.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Which. But my question is this, and I don't think you guys go into this. My question is, what about the difference in the generations?
Here we go, Mr. Glass Half Empty.
Well, what we have, Joan, is we have 80 million, roughly 78 or so baby boomers.
Right.
Who are now at the stage where they're saying, you know what, I don't want a big yard. I don't need 5 bedrooms and 4 baths. I just need a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, patio home with no yard. I mean, I can cut the yard with scissors,
right?
Or I pave it or whatever. And so they're moving out of these 6,000 square foot, 5,000 square foot houses into these 2,500 square foot houses. Many of them are, but there are 80 million of those folks. But the people who are coming along behind the generation, there are only about 30 million. So could we possibly have a house style imbalance there?
Well, I think it's possible. See, I think what the situation is, I think you're right. I think that is a consideration. But I guess that's a consideration that's more than 10 years out.
I
think the bulk of the baby boom, if they do that, would do that toward the end of the decade. I don't know, though. You know, I would think that people would do what you're describing, and yet maybe people will want to keep their big houses, or mm-hmm. they'll want the kids to be able to come back with the grandkids, or maybe the kids move back in with them after they get out of school. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, the thing about it is that even if if you look at the generational wave situation, even if every Gen Xer could buy a big house from the Ys, from the baby boomers, there still wouldn't be enough people to buy those houses.
Right. Right. So I think at some point this is going to affect the economy. It's got to.
The chickens
eventually.
Have got to come home to roost sometime,
right.
Don't they?
Right.
You would think, and of course what's going to happen is as that starts hitting, and I think you're right about when and how it's going to happen. It's not going to happen in 1 year. It's going to be a gradual effect, isn't it?
Right. That's true.
But I do believe that as the baby boomers get you know, closer to 60 and start nudging over into 60, like over the next 5 or 6 years, that's when it's a lot. I think that's when it's going to pick up some momentum.
I think that would be a good question the next time you have economists on the show to ask them.
Right. This bubble tendency, the possibility of a bubble, but of course we could possibly have bubbles in regions right now, Florida, California, several places in California, Washington ought to be a bubble, but because the government's there, it probably won't be.
Well, and I think for a lot of other reasons too. I think there are certain areas that are becoming in some ways immune from downturn, or at least won't feel downturns as much as other areas.
Right. Because they're propped up by, well, in the case of Washington, D.C., sort of an artificial economy.
Yeah, well, it's strange, though, because Washington has had its very severe housing downturns in the past. I think the most recent one was about 12, 13 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But now things are so built up here, if you want something that's close into the city, you're going to pay top dollar, and there's just no land left close to the city, and people are tired of commuting an hour and a half or 2 hours to get to work.
Let me throw another little thing into the ringer here. You can call me a gloomy Gus if you want to, but which I typically am not. But Joan, I just had Bill Brandt on the show, who's a pretty smart businessman, and he pays attention to the economy pretty well, including globally. And we were talking about currency, and I know that you're jealous of me talking to him about currency and not you. But we were talking about, you know, the dollar being devalued a little bit more, and the tendency for that to potentially create some inflationary pressures, and then interest rates going up. And if interest rates go up above just being a little bit above the inflation rate, if they keep going on up, that could have, if what he thinks may happen happens with interest rates going up, especially long term, that that could have an effect on the real estate.
Up on the wrong side of the bed this morning.
Well, I'm just trying to call it like it is here, Joan. But the economy is, we live in a global economy, Joan, and as you know, and everything that happens in flyover America is in some ways affected by the whether South Korea keeps enough dollars in their reserves or not.
Well, yeah, that was a big news item this week.
This week, wasn't it? It kind of sent ripples through the market and caused the stock market to drop a couple of days ago, almost a couple of hundred points.
Right.
Stand by, Joan. We're going to take a quick break. Pollyanna and Gloomy Gus will be right back after these messages. It's 20 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pride is our guest. Back, 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pride is our guest. And Joan, the bottom line is, Kiplinger says there isn't going to be really any kind of bubble bursting. And you know, Joan, I think, isn't it important for us to look back on our houses, the housing industry and the housing economy, really, in the United States? And it's really a marvel. It's really a global marvel to me, is the U.S. real estate market, because you know, in the middle of all of the bad news we got over the last 4 years or so, with the stock market, the Nasdaq crashing, the Dow coming down so much, and basically, people's 401ks turning into 201ks.
That's right.
In the middle of all that, people were still able to look over at their real estate and in most places in the country and say, okay, at least that's all right. And look how important the U.S. consumer was to the world economy over the last few years. You've commented on that many times. And look at, and you had to look at the real estate issue, the U.S. real estate market, and say that contributed to a lot of positive attitudes and positive behavior.
Oh, of course. No question about it.
So when Mr. Bush talks about the ownership economy, which I completely, the ownership society, I guess is his word.
Right.
I mean, that's not just Mr. Bush's term. I mean, this is the way America has been going for generations, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. Maybe.
Well, I mean, look at I don't think there's any country in the world that where the citizens own as much property as they do in the United States, just the general citizen. Do you?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I would think in Europe,
But even so, you know, it's still different. And so
okay.
I'm just trying to say that there's a lot of
I'm not as up on this as you, so I'll just follow your lead.
Well, there's a lot of good things that we can say about the U.S. real estate economy, the U.S. real estate market. And,
sure.
And so that's all I was getting. I think we can look beyond just the fact that what the houses, what they're worth. I think housing in America is a very important part of who we are. People being able to own homes. We've got a very active, a very healthy. A very healthy mortgage system, but then when we think about Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, maybe not
could
quite
use
so
a few little adjustments,
quite
maybe.
So healthy there,
yeah.
which they seem
right.
to be making. You know, that's another thing, Joan, that I noticed that you might have some thoughts on. Would I see Fannie Mae is getting ready to make some significant adjustments in their portfolio, and how they're going to hold mortgages? I wonder if that could ripple through the real estate market.
I wonder. It could.
Because, you
know,
they're in trouble, aren't they?
Well, they've gone through a couple of years of a lot of, I guess, insider corporate governance problems, as has Freddie Mac.
Right, right. John, let's move over and talk about health care.
Okay.
What's Kiplinger say about health care these days?
Well, we're saying that more employers are letting workers design their own health plans, and which kind of, you're talking about this ownership society, sort of brings them in. In healthcare, it's very important because it helps the worker to see how much healthcare is costing and help them be a partner in trying to keep costs down.
Well, and this is another way of solving the healthcare crisis that we have, the healthcare expense crisis, really.
Right.
We keep thinking, we got to be careful the way we say it, and I'm guilty of this too, Joan. Sometimes we say healthcare crisis, but really, there's not a healthcare crisis. There's a healthcare pay for it crisis.
Well, and a healthcare coverage crisis too.
Yeah.
I think.
Well, you're right, but still, it comes back to dollars, Joan. It comes back to who pays
right.
for what and. But one of the things that's happening that I think is very important in the marketplace today is that more and more companies are focusing on keeping their employees well, not paying for when they get sick. And I've been doing a series with the principal group. They every year they come up with a group they call the 10 best companies, and these are the 10 best companies, which by the way. Don't have to be companies that do business with them. These are just, in fact, one of them I've spoken to recently did not do business with Principal, but they identified them because of some of the things that they were doing. And Joan, you and I have reported, as Kiplinger has over the last several years, that healthcare has been increasing, what, at 10, 11, 12, 13% rates?
Oh, definitely double
year.
Digits, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This company I interviewed recently, their rates over the last 4 years, their increases have been around 3 to 4% a year.
Wow.
By doing some of the things that you talk about in the letter here.
Right, right.
And one of the things that we've got to do, that all of us have to do, Joan, I think, is don't you think that all of us have to be better consumers of healthcare, which includes making the right, deciding, making better decisions about when to spend money for healthcare, and also trying to live in a healthier way.
Right. Well, and that's what the whole HMO model was supposed to make us do, and it
Where
didn't
did we go
really
wrong?
Work. So, I'm sorry.
What happened?
Well, I don't know. You'll have to ask them. I don't know why their costs were so much higher than they said they were going to be. I think they underpriced themselves at the beginning, and that's what caused difficulty. And so now they're trying yet a new model, which, as you point out, is involving the employee more in sort of seeing what the pain is.
Well, I think it's all part of what I call self-insurance, meaning that the employee, everybody is going to have to pay a little bit more for their own health care, but they're also going to have to, we're all also going to have to take better care of ourselves and also become smarter consumers of healthcare. Stand by, Joan. Quick break, 29 after. We'll be right back.
Celebrating 6 years is radio's small business superhero. He's a syndicated radio host, syndicated columnist, author of 2 books, and all-around nice guy.
He's everywhere! He's everywhere!
The most fantastic crime fighter the world has ever known.
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 After. Thank you very much for joining us and for hanging around with us if you've already been here today. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, your website is, I know it's Kiplinger.com, K-I-P-L-I-N-G-E-R. Why don't you give us a little tour of what's on there today? Joan, don't you have all that in front of you?
Well, let's see. Let me bring up that page. Boy, there's all sorts of stuff. There's our economic forecasts and our top stories and a lot of archival stuff that you can. There's really a lot of different things where you. Oh, we got a nice graphic up here.
And is that free? What you're looking at is free.
What I'm looking at is the password protected site called KiplingerForecasts.com.
Okay, you're inside though.
I'm inside. Which I'm an insider.
Which, folks, you can be inside too if you want to subscribe, but also you can get a 30-day free trial to see what it's like over there, you know, where the other side lives, so to speak.
Right.
And you can do that by going to Kiplinger.com and subscribing and taking the 30-day free road trip. And that'll also give you access to any other publications, the weekly letter, the Kiplinger letter, and the 3 biweekly letters, California Tax and Agriculture. And then that magazine, it works through the 30-day free trial too, doesn't it?
It sure does. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
So I hope you'll check that out. And also, there's probably a phone number that's good for another 30 days too, isn't it, Joan?
I would say so. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
But at least go to their website, folks, and check
it
out. Bookmark that and see what you – I've been using their website for years. And
I sort of misspoke earlier. I really didn't, focus on the free part of the website, which is Kiplinger.com.
Right.
That you were talking about.
That's so the part.
You could root around all day on that and not pay a thing.
Exactly. And rooting around there, I like that term. That's a good one. Joan, I want to come back to the healthcare thing just for just a little bit more, because I really think this is one of the biggest things that Americans need to fix. We all need to work on this. This is something that Americans don't need to, and I'm talking about employers, employees, government, everybody, retirees. We've all got to say, okay, there's a lot of us that need health care. We've only got so much resources to pay for it. What can we do to make sure that we not only get good health care, but that we spend our money wisely and that we invest our money wisely? And Joan, one of those things that I'm excited about that we've talked about before is the association. The health savings accounts, HSAs.
Oh, those were approved late last year.
Right. And the MSAs became HSAs.
Would you still have MSAs too?
Right.
MSAs haven't gone away, but I think HSAs are a little bit easier to use, and they allow a tax deduction. They allow for employer contributions.
Right.
You can set up your own HSA, or an employer can set it up for you, but it all has to be done in the context of a high deductible health plan.
And if you're, it's all, and again, back to, you know, the term that you and I both have used this hour, this ownership society thing. If you're healthy, and you set up an HSA and you fund it, and you're healthy, you get to keep the part that you don't spend.
That's right.
And you get a tax deduction for it too. It becomes part of your own safety net, doesn't it, Joan?
That's right.
And so that's a good thing. And so, folks, I encourage you to find out about this, and this will get you started on your own part of this effort to make healthcare more affordable, to make it work for all of us. Because, you know, Joan, we think we got a sack of worms now. Wait till baby boomers get to be 70 and 75 years old.
Boy, it's going to be something.
That it's going to be. I don't even know if anybody's even looked at what that might might look like with regard to the, right. the impact on healthcare. I'm sure somebody has, but maybe they just, it was so scary they didn't
they
want
haven't,
to tell.
They better be starting right now.
I think, Joan, they did, and it was so scary they wouldn't, they threw right. a sheet over it, and they don't want anybody to look at it.
I'll believe that.
It was just too scary. Joan, let's move on down and talk about shipping. You guys say, this is a very interesting story to me, that inland waterway shipping is going to face some disruptions over the next few years.
Yeah, I think that is interesting because I think when we talk about shipping, we have tended, particularly because of Homeland Security and September 11th, to focus on country-to-country shipping, you know, shipping over the open seas. But we've got some domestic problems to deal with as well. We're saying that, you know, waterways need a lot of fixing.
Well, there are problems with dams and locks,
right.
those things. But you know, John, there's another thing that you guys don't point out, which doesn't surprise me. This is a little bit of an esoteric kind of a thing, but I do think it's something that's important, and that's the issue of how water wars are going to impact inland waterway navigation. And I want to mention that when we come back after these messages. Then we're going to move on to some financial issues, especially what's happening at the SBA and the budget, the U.S. budget. Stay with us.
Well, I was born in a small town.
We're back at 17 till. Joan, you weren't born in a small town, were you?
I was born in Greenwich, Connecticut.
See there? Well, that's kind of small.
No.
I know some folks in Greenwich. That's a good place.
It's a suburb.
That's a good place. Joan, we were talking about shipping and waterways and some of the disruptions that might be happening. But, you know, Joan, one thing that I think could possibly impact waterways and navigation and waterways, inland waterways, is what you and I have reported on many times in the past several years are the state water wars between Virginia and Maryland and Alabama, Florida, Georgia is having one. Colorado and California. Of course, Colorado, California navigation is not all that big a deal. But what I'm getting at, Joan, is there are regions of states that don't have enough water. They also don't have any navigable water, and
right.
they're trying to tap into 100 miles away or so. 200 miles, whatever, they're trying to tap into waterways of neighboring states and to pull it down so that those communities can have that water. Well,
right.
here's the thing. The communities on the waterways or near the waterways, when they use the water, they clean it up and put it back to the tune of like 85-90% of what they take out, they put back.
Right.
The communities who would propose to take water out of there and ship it, you know, 100 miles, they wouldn't be putting it back. It'd be going
Ooh.
Into some smaller tributaries.
Yeah, see, that's a problem.
See, that's a whole other level of challenge
right.
for the navigation situation that you guys mentioned. Now, I'm not saying that's happening right now, but that's an issue that some people are dealing with. There are people trying to tap into their rivers, basically.
Right, right.
From other parts
right.
of the world. So
it's going to get nasty.
You know, you don't get this stuff from anywhere else, Joan.
I know.
You got to come to the Small Business Advocate Show to get this.
That's right.
What about, let's talk about the budget, Joan, and move
do
on down a little bit.
Oh, do we have to? Oh,
okay, well,
budget.
We can move over to, I'll tell you what, before we do that, though.
No, I'm kidding. No, it's okay.
I know.
It's
no, okay. There is one thing I want to mention. You guys say in the financial services section, you guys say that firms seeking small loans needn't worry about Bush's plan to shut down the micro loan program at the SBA.
Right. His plan is to get rid of it. And the way we've written this item is interesting. It doesn't say that they're going to save the microloan program. What it says is that no matter how small your loan needs are, there should be an SBA program to service you.
Right. Well, and I had Hector Barreto, the administrator of the SBA, was on the show this week. And I asked him specifically, How is the SBA doing regarding having money to loan? He said, we're going to have a record $22 billion to loan this year.
Well, but what you need to ask him the next time he's on is how are you going to help the very, very, very small borrowers?
Right, right. And the thing that one of the things that they have told me in the past is like any business, they have to try to use their resources the right way and make sure that they're focused on the highest percentage of help that they can give. And I think maybe after a while they've decided. I'm not saying this. I don't know that this is the case, but I get the idea that maybe the micro loan program is maybe that's not the SBA is not the best place to go for that.
Well, I hope that's not true, because I think of microloans as sort of like orphan drugs. I mean, somebody has to help these people.
Right.
And if it's not going to be private lenders, you know, I know as the folks on the conservative side would hate to hear this, but, you know, the government needs to step in if the private sector won't.
Right. Well, you do make a good point. I need to get inside of this microloan thing a little bit more. I'm gonna do that and find out, because I think there are two sides to that issue. And you know, Joan, you know me. I mean, I'm fighting for small businesses to get all the capital they can get. I'm certainly not somebody who would say, you know, let's get rid of this program. But I do think that there may be business issues that are involved. And I'm gonna get into this a little bit more and find out what's going on there, Joan. Let's move over and talk about the budget a little bit. You guys have got some very interesting statistics to talk about with regard to the discrepancy between what the older generation gets out of the U.S. budget and the younger generation.
Do you really want to scare your listeners?
These are very interesting numbers.
This statement, older Americans get about 40% of federal spending each year. And when you figure, you know, such a big part of the federal budget goes to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, that makes a lot of sense.
40% of the federal budget goes to...
Even though they're not 40% of the population, they get 40% of federal spending.
They're only about 13% over 65,
right.
according to Kiplinger.
And we say spending on children 17 and younger is under 8.5%,
mm-hmm.
and edging lower each year.
And you go right back up there to what you said, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. Those are the biggies, aren't they?
That's it. Yeah.
And that's not even, and that's the whole budget. That's not just, that's not discretionary money. That's the, really the largest
the
part
pie.
Of the,
and the whole
largest
pie,
part
which
of the budget.
Defense and international and
right.
everything.
And of course, you guys point out when we talk with regard to political clout in developing the budget, you guys say, follow the money.
Follow the money. Also follow the seniors.
Right.
I think.
Right, which is another reason why the AARP continues to be one of the top lobbying organizations.
Right, and it's interesting in this whole Social Security situation. You know, the president has said that his proposal is not going to affect folks, I think, 55 and over, did he say? And it's
right.
certainly not going to affect current retirees.
Right.
And yet they're the ones that are getting pretty vocal about this.
That is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but it's sort of interesting that they would, I guess, have deep feelings about this program and want to voice them, even though their ox would not be gored, so to speak,
well,
in any changes that come about.
I also think we need to differentiate between the AARP and all people who are elderly or who are older, a little longer in the tooth. I don't think the AARP speaks for everybody, but that's another story. Stand by, quick break, 10 till, right back. We're going to talk about new auto improvements when we come back. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. By the way, folks, I want to remind you that next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I'm going to be broadcasting from Florida. I'm going to be in Boca Raton with the Office Depot's Business Women's Success Conference in Boca Raton. I'm going to be broadcasting down there Monday and Tuesday, introducing you to the attendees at that conference. I'm really looking forward to that. And this will be our second year to do that live. I've interviewed the attendees, but this will be our second year to be on-site broadcasting face-to-face with our guests. I'm looking forward to that. And then on Wednesday, I will be in Amelia Island working with some bankers, and I'll tell you more about that a little bit later on. So Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, I'm going to be on the road next weekend, but we will be live as we always are. Joan, by the way, did you know, Joan, that this is a great day in history?
I did not.
1938. Guess what happened on this day in 1938?
I can't begin to imagine.
The first nylon bristle toothbrush was made.
Ooh, now so what did you use, what did people use before then?
I guess broom straws. I don't know.
Really? Seriously?
I don't know, Joan. That was before my time. Yeah. I thought you might remember.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a great day. Aren't you glad about that, Joan?
I'm thrilled. So thrilled.
Joan, what are some of the new things that are being developed for automobiles these days?
Well, let's see. I think we have a whole section in here in the letter. And, well, I like this first one, tires that won't go flat.
Yeah. You need to get some of those, Jones.
Yeah. Oh, we're saying by the end of the decade. Well, it's going to be a while, I guess.
There actually already are run flat tires.
Really?
You know that, didn't you?
Run flat? Oh, no.
Yeah, they're actually some cars.
I don't know anything about
some
cars.
Some of the more upscale cars, especially the higher
BMW,
dollar cars.
Yeah.
They have run flat tires.
Wow, I got to get me one of them.
You need to get four of them, Joan, because
yeah.
I don't see you out on the side of the road changing the tires.
No,
Joan.
I don't see me doing that either.
I see you driving on the rim into the service station. Like,
well, you know, my husband...
That dates me, doesn't it, Joan?
My husband forced me to learn how to change a tire.
Oh, he did?
So he would never have to worry, you know, if I got stranded. But
Was he worried, or was he just... He didn't want you to call him and say, you come change it.
Exactly. But what he doesn't realize is that I kind of forgot everything I learned. So
right.
It was kind of... Didn't work.
So he's living in denial right now.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Joan, let's move over and talk a little bit about the global economy. The Eurozone, as you guys call it, Europe, is going to have another lackluster year of growth.
That's right. And we're saying that things will pick up in the second half of the year. But we're saying for the whole year, their GDP is only going to be about 1.4%. You compare that with what we were saying for ours, which I think was between 3 and 4,
mm-hmm.
and that's quite a big difference.
Well, you know, Joan, I mean, they had 1.8% apparently in 2004 in growth percent when we had 4.4.
Yeah.
We're going to drop again in 2005 ourselves to maybe under 4, 3.5 to 4, something
right.
like that, but still a pretty darn healthy, solid growth level. You guys report that Kiplinger reports that they're going to that the Eurozone is going to drop to 1.4.
Exactly, that's what I just said. Yeah.
Did you say that? I'm sorry. Well, from a percentage standpoint, that's a huge percentage, isn't it?
Oh yeah.
And but the thing is,
that's like almost no growth at all.
Well, it's negative growth. But the thing is, Joan, is you know one of the things Bill Brandt was saying in the previous hour was all the challenges that we have in America. We've got the dollar slid, you know, as you know, recently. We've got inflation, a little bit of inflation worries. Interest rates are going up. We've got all these challenges. And can't you just imagine the euro? And the euro is doing well, by the way. The euro currency is increasing.
It doesn't seem fair.
But, well, I could just imagine those guys in Europe saying, I wish we had some of America's problems. Can we have some of those, please?
At least we're one country.
Well, that's true. That's true. Of course, they're trying to get there. But, Joan, not
it's
in
hard,
our lifetime.
Though.
Not in our lifetime, right?
Yeah, it's hard.
Well, there are too many different – I mean, I don't see the Germans and the Russians – I mean, the Germans and the French ever thinking of themselves in the same country, do you?
Well, and they all have so many different rules and laws that have impacts on their economies that it's
right.
very hard to get something standardized through an entire region because you have different cultures, too.
Right, right. Speaking of cultures, Joan.
Ooh, there's a segue.
Regardless of the – I'm the king of segue. Regardless of how anybody thinks about what has been going on in Iraq, Joan, don't you have to tip your hat to the politicians in Iraq for the compromises and the things that they've been doing in the last week or so with electing their president and prime ministers?
Well, I think it's interesting now. Are they electing pretty much a Shiite slate, or how is that working?
Well, it's starting out that way, but they are having to work with the other coalitions because the Shiites don't have a 50% majority. Anyway, it's very interesting to see what's going on over there and something that bears watching. Joan, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next week.
Okay.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen. She'll be back. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
In Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.